Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I am very excited to talk to today's guest. This is going to be... I'm so excited. This is going to be an episode where we talk about a lot of cool stuff that we've previously only mentioned, but we're going to really dive into it today. So I'm very excited to introduce to you Anita DiFrancesco, who is a psychotherapist, a somatic and sex therapist. How are you doing?
All right, Team Marie. Wonderful. Thank you for having me tonight.
So there's a lot of questions that I have, like just from the jump, about what even is... Tantra, because I know that that's one of your areas of expertise. So how would you explain it to someone who is unfamiliar?
Well, Tantra is first of all, it's a yoga. Okay. I mean, it's a yoga in the sense of the philosophy of yoga, you know, learning how to understand the mind connection to the body. So when we have a mind connection to our body and a body connection to our mind, we can achieve almost anything. And meaning not necessarily sex, but anything in your life. So why is yoga so popular? Because people are getting focused, balanced, more contained. They're more learning how to use their energy in a more productive way. So when you bring sex into it and you take that energy known as the sexual energy or even the chi energy, and you combine it with all of this, you become a healthier person in your sexual relationships with people. So basically, Tantra is just a way of understanding your energy. Now, people separate sexual energy from the rest of the energy of the body, but the sexual energy is really the energy of the body, and it is the most creative and productive energy of your body. And of course, we are sitting on it, or we're suppressing it, or we're living in shame with it, or... you know, not being feeling liberated enough. So basically, your sexual energy is your most creative. So what we're doing is taking all of the energy of the body in Tantra and learning how to use the motor skills, the senses, and combine all of this and become more of a wholesome person. That's basically what it is. But because it's a yoga, you work with a yoga philosophy of learning how to be committed, centered, learning how to have responsibility, you know, and that's basically the life force. So your life force is your sexual energy, but it's the energy. I'll just say sexual energy since we're on the topic of sexuality. But if you ask me, it's all one energy and learning how to, you know, use this as a way of healing yourself and others, or connecting and having a full productive life without having the shame there and the underlying part that makes sex so secretive. Or
so, if I'm understanding correctly, so Tantra exists and as a practice can be used separate from sexuality, but ultimately sexual energy is an intrinsic facet of people, and therefore to address a person holistically, one has to discuss and work on sexuality. Is that fair?
You mean in Tantra?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
Because Tantra is a weaving of things. Your emotional, your physical, your spiritual, and your sexual, but not necessarily your sexual. You can take your emotional, your physical, and your spiritual. Your spiritual includes sexual. Not necessarily do you have to say the word sexual, because your spiritual self is the passion, the life. You know, when they say go, when you go to a store and it says a wine or, you know, an alcohol store, it says buy spirits or something. Usually you see that sign on the outside, come and get your spirits. Mm-hmm. Well, your spirits are opening up to your creative energy in your body. So we say sexual energy because our society is very focused on the sexual. And really, a lot of people want to become more freer and liberal. And they think that it's only done through sexual, having sex or going out and doing different sexual things with different kinds of people, or, you know, being a 90-year-old having sex with a 20-year-old. You know, they think by doing that, but that's not really, yes, doing all those things and experimenting is fine, but that's not really where your sexual energy comes alive. It comes alive when you just are free and liberated, and when you take off that lid. So it is intrinsic, if you want to say, but really it isn't. Tantra, the sexual energy is one energy with the body. And the goal, what we're teaching people, is how to connect this lower energy and bring it up into the heart so that now you have this fullness in your body and you're much more productive, you're much more wholesome, you're much more centered. And of course, the heart and the sexual we would like that to be together. Then when you go to have sex with someone, you're using a lot more of all of your senses. So when you have all of these senses that come alive and they're part of your human condition and your emotions and your intellectual and your like I said, your spiritual is your sexual, but that just means free. So when we get to free, is it sex or isn't it sex?
So what does this look like in terms of you're training someone, you're working with a client, etc.? They come into you not super tapped in their own bodies, like probably a little bit depersonalized from it. And then what are you actually going to do with this person so that they can be more involved in their own existence?
Well, first of all, conversation happens, communication. If someone's not tapped into their body, of course, you know, in Tantra, we talk about the chakras. So we work with opening the chakras or connecting the chakras. But basically what has to be done is there has to be some connection to the breath in the body, which it is intrinsic. And it's de-armoring is what I do. I de-armor what's in there, expression that hasn't lived, say that they have in their muscles, if they're not, like you said, tapped into their body. Chances are they have unexpressed emotion living in pockets. And generally, some people can be affected in many different ways in feeling with the heart or in the sexual way of experiencing orgasm or having the feeling for sex. Or they might be, you know, suppressed in another area in their thinking patterns. So everyone is affected differently, but it does exist in the body, like you said, the holding or the, you know, the blockage, but not necessarily would they be 100% affected in a sexual way. But chances are, I would say about 70 to 80% are.
Okay. So somebody comes in and you have conversation, like I assume that there's physical exercises that go with this. Like, is it a meditative thing? Like, is just a facet of like the yogic practice? Like what actually happens in a session?
Well, first of all, I like to take a look at their body just to see how they're standing, where they're holding. My first thing is to, I don't even get into conversation right away. I mean, as far as like finding out, well, who you are and what were your experiences, I don't really need to do all that. Some people need to do all that. I eventually find all that out, but I can just tell by looking at someone. Now, this is me, you know. Normally, you talk to people and you get to know their history, if they've had abuse as a child, how many messed up relationships have they had that left them out on a limb and they're affected by it, or they have patterns, you know, spiritual insufficiencies and different things like that. But for me, what I generally do is I first look at their body and I get an idea of where the armor is living, where the unexpression is. And then I start with exercises. You know, I do some breathing and I do some gestalt therapy and movement, undulation. So once we start to do the breathing and the do bioenergetic exercises, I employ Dr. Wilhelm Reich's work and Dr. Alexander Lowen's work, which is bioenergetics. I employ those two along with the Tantra. In the Tantra's more like the eye gazing, more working with the centering, more with the movement. Then I take these from this bag of tools here and I put them together. But I take steps in this. And what happens is, first I want to empty them out. And it is done through the breath. And then when I start to get into talking with them in the gestalt therapy, their story unfolds. So I wait for them to unfold the story rather than ask them or have them tell me. Because the biggest thing in the world is people never believe that they have issues. And people don't really go around telling people, like, you know, their pain. not so much. They'd rather be numb and hold it because they don't know how. So I give them the opportunity to do it on their own rather than me say, okay, now tell me, were you abused as a child or were you this or that? No, I don't need to know all that stuff because they will tell me after I employ the certain breathing work that I do with them. And then once they start to, then I edge on with them. But key is breathing. The key is the breathing and moving the body. So that's a beginning. Then you want to employ some tantra where maybe you're sitting with them, you're working, you know, doing some eye gazing to begin to get them back because there's armor that sits and lives in your eyes. Now, if your eyes are not, if your eyes are like, say, we say numb, you can be looking at someone and not really seeing them. So the goal is to reduce this armor up here so that they can have a sense of bonding to connect with others. How do you connect with people? The first thing is your eyes. You look at someone, you like them, you have eye contact. And then the body, the lower body starts to feel, ooh, maybe I want to have sex with this person or I have chemistry. Chemistry has to, we have to create it sometimes, but you have to be open. The chemistry's there. So you have to be open. But you also have to be choosy in who you're kind of going to direct your chemistry to. But so when we do after the breathing, then I take the tantra, which is the eye gazing and the maybe some Kama Sutra positions where we're just sitting side by side or eye gazing, sitting across from each other. And then some gentle touch, which is just light touch. And there's no real nudity or anything like that. And everyone thinks that tantra is like, let's get nude. And it's not. It's just gentle touch, teaching someone how to understand the feeling that's coming onto their skin and to honor that and to say, hey, I want some more of that. Some people only get that feeling on the nipples, on the penis, on the vagina, the yoni and lingam. But having that on your arms and your legs with your body clothed can give that area a sense of sustainment and also like it could be a way of bringing the passion back on. But beside that, it gives that person like to understand the fullness. This person is touching me with their fullness or are they touching me with, oh, now I know how they're touching me. It's not even real. They go like this. They're cold. Or maybe they're touching you more with the fullness. So then you start to understand the heart. The heart develops. Without the sex, without the touching the genitals, private parts. And this is how you start to learn about love. Because, see, our society went from, you know, sexual revolution, let's have sex. I came in the sexual revolution. It was like, let's have sex without being married, without being in love. And everybody got, you know, emotionally damaged. Like now is why Tantra and such things as sexuality, sexual training, intimacy training, and all of these things are really so high on the uprise because our sexual revolution left us kind of numb. We didn't know how to, you know, what was touch? Touch was only here. That's all. Some people only know touch of the genitals. Do you really know this touch? And can you receive that?
I think it's a really good point that, like, in modern society, the amount of physical contact that is socially acceptable, like, and especially for men, I think that men are given less opportunity to touch other people in a positive way. I think it's relegated to either sexuality or to violence, or, you know, if you're on a sports team together, then you're allowed to, like, smack somebody's ass. But like long lingering hugs with friends, especially if it's another dude, like, you know, still given this sort of random side eye action. But like humanity requires touch. Like it's one of our needs. Like the term skin hunger resonates with me very deeply as like a human need. We know that like babies need it to survive, that we know that like it's related to health outcomes in terms of like healing and in terms of like longevity and all that kind of stuff. Like we need it, but we're like told that it's weird and it's bad or any number of things, that it's inappropriate. Yeah. Is that
a lot more men nowadays are hugging.
Okay.
You know, you do see a lot more men you know, hugging each other and even kissing on the lips. And they're not, they're just regular, they're heterosexual. Mm-hmm. And I have friends that do that. So it's not necessarily that you would, I mean, you definitely see it in the homosexual population, which is much more open and they're, you know, and that's just like a man and a woman. But in the heterosexual, I'm seeing more men now hugging and even kissing on the lips.
Hmm. Okay.
And it's just, and sometimes I'm like wondering, I'm saying, well, I don't know. Or, you know, is that a normal thing or is that the metrosexual thing or what is really happening here? But a lot, some men are, but I think that men in general are becoming more in their feminine energy. And the feminine energy allows them to be a little bit more closer to the same sex, and like women are, or even toward women more, because women want to have the man more open for them, because a lot of women are deprived from touch in their relationships, or they just don't know how to ask for it or get what they really want, and the relationship sometimes just becomes about sex. And so there's a lot of imbalances. And of course, with Tantra, you learn how to balance out and give and receive. And you teach each other how to give and receive and communicate as well what your wants, desires, and needs are. But I think with all this spirituality work happening out there in yoga, the men are on the move more nowadays. I mean, touch is definitely a, you know, a definitely a way of living. It's part of our life. Even babies need to be touched. But I think that there's a lot of rigidity in our world. So a lot of people have this sense of like holding on, or they can't see, they don't touch, not because they don't want to, because they don't have the liberation. They think that touch is all around sexual energy, and everything in, that will be directed in that way would be sexual. And so it's because they don't understand their own sexuality, and they're afraid of expressing themselves. And also, they don't want to look sexy.
So I think that a very prevalent idea about Tantra is, of course, you know, that it's known very, very much by its sexual component. And I think that one of the biggest things, if people are familiar with it at all, but just like a little bit, it's going to be something about you can have sex for 7 hours without coming. And like, isn't that so crazy? Is that A, accurate? B, is that just like an outlier of what it's like? What, how realistic and representative is that concept?
Well, once you start to practice the exercises, there's Kegel exercises, you're learning how to sustain and hold the energy. So a lot of men that have, say, premature ejaculation, they're very attracted to Tantra because they have the nerve ending at the end of the penis is very sensitive for them. So a lot of time they would ejaculate quicker, because very sensitive. But the general man who is not having, say, a relationship, and he's not really practicing, would also is attracted to Tantra. But the everyday man out there that wants to learn how to really last and please her is attracted also. And yes, it is true, because you can learn how to transmute the energy. But the exercises don't necessarily happen during the actual act of intercourse. You're practicing and living that lifestyle. So see, that's where it is. It's not like, let me turn it on. I'm going to be, you know, all holding back tonight and we're going to do it all night and I'm not going to have the ejaculation till the end of the weekend, you know, which does happen. And there's also internal and intrinsic orgasms where, like talking about the prostate, where men are having a lot of prostate work done, which is very, very popular and very, very pleasuring nowadays. And they actually have an internal orgasm, like a woman would, like the woman has inside. If they understand, but see, the person who's really into the prostate has to, first of all, have a clearness of their body. They have to be healthy. They have to like eat good foods. They have to, you know, be into vitamins. You have to sort of feed the organs in the body. You can't just like turn it on and off. So you have to practice a lifestyle. And the lifestyle is, you know, I'm not saying you got to be walking around being a yogi or anything. You just have to be like in your body and in your mind and be in the life force. So the meditation of your own life. And when you start to practice that through breathing, through Kegels, yes, you can sustain that energy. You can learn how to contain it. And then, of course, ejaculation happens, but there's that orgasm that's happening, which is like a multiple orgasm within. That can happen also, where it's like riding a wave, and you never really have to let it out because it's going in. And men do experience that. And a lot of time it's done, a lot of time with a regular partner, because you have to have some consistency. You're not just going to pick someone up and expect that to happen, you know, or meet someone for the first time and you're doing it, but also practicing. And there's exercises, masturbation, there's doing a lot of movement, Kegels, different things that we instruct a man to do that especially a lot of the premature ejaculation people that need to work on that area more so because they're learning. So we, or just the everyday man that wants to become more, it's transmuting the energy. It all is transmuting it. And riding your own orgasms and having the orgasms within your body in your daily life, not being so goal-oriented there. I got to come. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know.
I want to change the topic just a little bit. So this is another facet of your work, that in addition to doing the psychotherapeutic facet, you also do some surrogacy. Can you speak a little bit about what that means for you in your practice?
Well, surrogacy, I look at everything as that, because surrogacy, well, the way we work with surrogacy, it's a triangle. There are three of us. We have one psychotherapist, and then we have another person in the middle that does some kind of affection work. And then the third part, where that's the part I'm involved in right now, although I can be all three because I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, but I'm working as the surrogate who would actually take the client, actually the patient, to the next level of having sexual intercourse. Some of the patients that we see, we call them patients because this is much more medical. Would be like people who haven't, maybe they're a 50-year-old virgin who's never had sex, OCD, very protected by the mother, a lot of psychological challenges and things, or maybe they're bipolar, or Asperger's, the 50-year-old Asperger man. Asperger people don't really socialize as well. We're not saying all Asperger people are that way. A lot of young people now, that's the new thing. Lots of young people born Asperger right now. That's like the new look. I'm serious. That's very high on the uprise.
Yeah.
High-functioning Aspergers. But the issue with that is they don't want to socialize, so sex to them is not really important. So a lot of them grow up to be like virgins, you know.
So then what is it that eventually happens that makes them decide, oh, I should probably go work on this?
Well, a lot of time they... you know, a lot of them go to work. This is the Asperger person. They go to work, they have jobs. Maybe they find somebody they like and they don't know what to do. So then they seek help. Well, I met this girl, but I met her. And that's it.
Okay.
You have to tell them what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of work. I've worked with a lot of the Asperger, and these men are 50 and 60.
So it sounds like it's a lot of socialization.
Yeah, teaching them how to hold hands and hug. And when you do hug them, so what I do is I'll hug them and hold hands, and let them hold me, let them touch my breast. They don't really touch anything. And it, to them, it's like I don't sense a feeling coming through. So, of course, I work the exercises up, and I still don't sense a feeling, but it does take time. So I give them maybe like an image makeover, and that's another thing I do, like, you know, work with your hair, work with your muscles, work with your teeth, you know, your body and things like that. To give them a sense of like, hey, women are going to look at me, because no one ever told them like the normal man out there to go out and like, hey, you know, get your hair cut this way, or, you know, lose your belly or get your biceps up, you know, so things like that help people to encourage the body image, make them feel sexier. But that's just the Asperger. The other kind of patients that we work with are a lot of people that are physically disabled in wheelchairs, and which is, you know, they have sexual feeling, they have social skills, but they may have been born with cerebral palsy or maybe polio. So it's very challenging with them because they don't usually have feeling in the bottom of their legs. Mm. So you have to sort of be with them and, you know, be in the bed with them and give them hugging and touching. And they're beautiful because they're so happy to hold a woman.
So is the idea for someone who has a physical disability, if they aren't going to have sensation, like what is the goal? What is the outcome of treatment?
Well, no, they do have sexual feeling.
Okay.
They do have.
Just not physical sensation.
They may be paralyzed. Uh-huh. Or like people that have cerebral palsy are in a wheelchair. So I don't think they have much feeling in the legs, uh-huh. but they do have and get an erection and do have orgasm. They have feeling in their arms. People coming back from the war, we're going to have a lot of this now, you know, the war zone group of people coming back with lots of physical disabilities, but they have already been, you know what I mean? They already had a life happening before they went over there. These people that are born with cerebral palsy or have multiple sclerosis and things like that, or polio, but they do have sexual feelings. No. But what it is with them is these kind of people don't usually generally going to go out and meet a woman, or a woman's going to be like instantly attracted to them. And they have that kind of loss. It's not a fear. It's like a not being accepted.
So when someone who's coming to you for surrogacy, is that, I mean, the goal that they will be able to take what they get out of these sessions and then go experience it with a partner? Like, or is this just like, is the outlet through which I will experience sexuality?
Well, we encourage them, especially if they're the Asperger ones or say the OCD ones or just people that have, that they're not physically disabled, to go out. I had one person, we never really could diagnose what his condition was, but I encouraged him to do many things. He was going to dances. He was going out. So yes, that's the goal. The people that are in wheelchairs I still encourage them. Hey, because they go to events that are just for their population. So I encourage them to meet somebody like themselves, you know, and they can. A lot of time for them, they generally don't. People that are, you know, cerebral palsy or, you know, in a wheelchair, they generally don't. You know, for them, it's pretty much they meet, if they have a surrogate come, they're having moments and they're having some joy, interventional joy in their life. And that's some happiness for them. So
but
some,
it's
some
not necessarily like a skill building. It's not necessarily something that, you know, somebody's going to take away something they can do elsewhere.
No, it's not really a skill building. Okay. I mean, it's just more or less giving them the opportunity to be with someone, because they can't go out and get somebody that easy. Mm-hmm. They're in a wheelchair. They're like, their bodies are very, you know, but I encourage them because they do population things with their kind of people to meet someone. But generally, a lot of the time, those kind of people just, their families take care of them and they.
So I think that based on what you've said thus far, I think it could be possibly confusing the difference between their, like the use of a surrogate partner in that situation versus like a very patient and loving sex worker. If what it is just that I want to feel this with someone who will give me affection, okay. and I don't necessarily have an existing relationship with them, and we don't necessarily date, and we aren't necessarily that kind of friend, but I can go to this person and they will give me, will help me meet these needs. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's different, because with a surrogate, we have a set number of times we see them.
Okay.
They can't keep coming to us for, like, say, pleasure or a healing sex worker. Okay. That's different. A healing sex worker can provide this forever.
Okay.
But not with a sexual surrogate. They'll come to, like, our psychotherapist for so many sessions, then the middle person, which does some communication and touching exercises, and then the third person, where I am, taking it to the full level if they're ready. But then they go back to the first person, and we're only allowed to do maybe 5 sessions.
Okay.
So it's very, and the reason that they do come, because a lot, like one person that I see in a wheelchair, like he always masturbates, but then nothing was happening for him. He never went to anyone. So then I guess because he got older, you know, or his body changed something, and that's why he seeked out surrogacy. He said because when he would touch himself, masturbate, nothing would happen anymore, but it used to. Mm. So he pretty much self-pleasured himself. So he seeked that out, but he had never really touched a woman. And you have to be very careful with these people, because there's that boundary that they can get very close to you because you're not, it's not like seeing the sex worker that's seeing someone who got divorced and is very lonely. That's a different work. Like you said, the healing sex worker that's with someone that doesn't have anyone in their life and they're lonely. That's million men out there. That's a million men out there. Mm-hmm. But the surrogate is very, very, there's a lot of boundaries. There's only a certain amount of times we see them. We cannot make it a pattern. It's only like about four or five times. And we take a lot of notes on them. And the goal is, yes, to help them to come more into their fullness and maybe to seek out a partner.
And what is that experience like for you? Because you're going to be working with people that you, I mean, do you just have to find something you like about everybody? Do you work with people that like, I don't really actually like you. You're not a very nice person. Like, how is the experience for you to be doing this connection, to be doing this like affection for people that haven't necessarily had to earn it from you through like friendship or like, you know, getting to know them? Like, what is that like?
Well, I think it takes a special kind of person to really do this because you have to really be equipped in your psyche, number one, in your emotions, too. For me, I have a lot of clearness that I work with, my own clearing of my own energy. I mean, this may sound, but I just love everyone. So I mean, after doing so much Tantra, I've learned how to bring love into my body. So everyone looks the same to me. It's like there's no prejudice. There's no judgment because the Tantra teaches that. And as a teacher of Tantra, I have to have embodied that. So I have, because I have to had taken all these classes for many years. And then for me to be taking it to another level from Tantra to surrogacy, which I've been doing surrogacy for a long time, I have a boundaries and a clearness. So I just more or less just look at people. I mean, I was very sick as a child. I had rheumatic fever and I was in a wheelchair when I was 9 years old. And I was very sick and I was around a lot of sick people. Kids were dying around me. They all died. I was like one of the only kids who lived. And at a time when rheumatic fever was, people were dying. They didn't have enough medicine in the 60s for this. Leaves you with like a little bit of heart damage. But at that time, I was in a wheelchair and I thought I wasn't going to be able to walk. And I wanted to be a healer. I wasn't going to die like all the other children. So I see myself now with people in wheelchairs. It's kind of funny that connection comes to me because the people, I thought I'd never be able to walk. And because my joints were very swollen, I had, you know, rheumatic fever is autoimmune disease. And a lot of, like I said, children had died. So for me, I learned how to awaken. I had a lot of awakenings in my life from that time on. So I was actually more moving above prejudice, moving above judgment, moving into my higher power from a very young age. And it's a lot of people, that's why they, you know, I've been to California for 20 years there. I went there to do all my studies, but a lot of people nowadays they're wanting to find themselves, the truth. And that's what this whole new age movement is about. And for me, it came like it introduced itself to me when I was 9. So then of course I went on to study. And so now I'm able to work with people because I have this sense of clearness and natural, authentic love that just comes. It's like, I love you. You're I love and I'm here to heal you. I have no judgment. I don't look at people like, oh, they're fat. Oh, they're mean. I don't do that. Mm-hmm. It's not part of, you cannot be in this work. If you have that, you cannot be in this work.
So I don't know how familiar you are with the other people who do surrogacy, like if it's a network where everyone is fairly connected, but is that fairly true of people in the field? Is there a general personality that you find that does this work? Because I don't understand there to be a lot of people on the East Coast that do surrogacy, and I'm curious if the culture and that personality don't necessarily jive, but what do you think about that?
Well, being in LA 20 years, I've seen everything. Because everybody does everything there. Just like me, right? Well, I'm an LA-er. I'm definitely, but I was born here in South Philadelphia. And I've been back 5 years. Now, one thing about surrogacy, when you saw the movie The Sessions and Helen Hunt, did you see how smooth she was? How very authentic and how very non-judgmental. And she had this certain way about her that was very flowing and fluid. And look at this man. He's in a, was he in a, like a...
an iron lung.
An iron lung. And that's the real personality. She got that acting part down really good. That's the true personality of a surrogate. A lot of the surrogates that I know, I'm not sure, a lot of them cross over. Some are tantra teachers. Some are, you know, sex healers. Sexological body work healers, and then they go into polyamory or they go into surrogacy. But surrogacy is much more, like you said, it's only a certain amount of times you see these people. Most of them are disabled. So you have to be able to handle someone that has a mental illness that's maybe schizophrenic. And you have to be able to handle that. I don't know if all the time, all the surrogacy people that I know, and there's not many of them here on the East. I know people in California. I don't know if their personalities are like mine in a session, say, or if they really have that. They're in the business and everyone's healing, so I see that part of people, but I couldn't go in detail with you to say what each and every person's, you know, whole makeup is once they're...
So you mentioned before that you feel... And correct me if I'm wrong, that Tantra is having like an upswing right now. Is that correct?
It's already upswinged.
Okay. So, all right. So perhaps I'm not looking at it like historically long enough because we're obviously talking about a fairly ancient practice. But what about surrogacy? Like, where is that right now? Where is, as a business, is it booming? Is it dying? What is happening?
Well, surrogacy is starting. There, honestly, I'm an actress too, so I know about the whole movie business. And when the movie The Sessions came out, that was the year I got to screen all the I was part of the nominating committee for the Screen Actors Guild, and I got a copy of every film. Now, this is really, really funny. They sent me at least 100 films, and I had to sign for every one of them. Do you know that The Sessions one got lost?
Oh, weird.
In the 100 films that came to me to view, I had to watch everyone. Of course, I got into the theaters free to see them, but they also give them to you to have at home so you can review them and pick out the best actor and actress. And they pick so many people a year to be on this committee. I was on it that year that it came out. And of all the films, it was like that was the only one that somehow the slip blew off, the UPS slip, and they never made for it back to me. They didn't. And usually the companies, the production companies will send it to you if... You know, because on the East Coast, I'm telling you, the slips blow right off the wall, you know, the doors. So a couple of them did, and they sent me the film, but they wouldn't send me The Sessions. I think someone in my building took it because they really, really, it was funny. Yeah. But I have a copy of all the films for 2012 when that came out. But anyway, your question was, what was your question about?
How the business of surrogacy is going.
Yeah, because that movie, they did, Oscars gave that no light at all. Mm. Oscars gave that nothing. And if you were to watch the Oscars that year, and since I was on the committee watching all the different, a lot of the movies, they get some talk, they get some play, they get write-ups. Oscar didn't give that anything. Not, they didn't even mention it at the Oscars. It might have had some write-ups in magazines, but so I didn't think that it was very acceptable in Hollywood, the whole thing about surrogacy, because it was sex, you know. And but I think that now with this whole thing with the war and everything, and you know, maybe it's going to come to an end, and a lot more of the, you know, our men are coming back. I think surrogacy is going to start to take another light. But I don't know if it'll be called surrogacy.
Hmm.
Because I think surrogacy sounds, it might not sound, you know, it sounds like sex and money, or it could sound like, you know, something else. But I definitely see something coming with that. As far as Tantra, Tantra is already there. Tantra, intimacy, sexuality, that's already up, that's up there now. And still people, you know, frown at the word Tantra because people think of Tantra as an orgy. They think of it as, like, because when Vatayana is the man who wrote the Kama Sutra, when he talked about, you know, enlightening the senses, he would have people feed each other like strawberries. You know, you exchange with your mate, and you flirt with your mate, and you flirt with other people. But maybe it did turn into orgies way back in the day, which it probably turned into polyamory right now. But anyway, to make the point that wasn't his goal, but he wanted to enlighten the senses with people, and most people view Tantra like, oh, sex, oh, orgy, bad. Ooh. I'm serious. In here in Philly?
I like the, oh, sex, oh, orgy, bad.
Well, here in Philadelphia.
I want that to be my ringtone.
Well, here in Philadelphia, it's you know, it's not, it's accepted if you're, you know, high up there and you've written books and you're somebody like Betty Dodson, you know? Mm-hmm. You know Betty Dodson?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're like Betty Dodson, your sex is accepted everywhere. It depends on who you are with the business and who you are presenting it. Mm. If you're just somebody that's nobody, then it's going to look bad. But if you're somebody that's high up there within the business and you've got lots of books and you've got lots of 2 million blogs happening, then you're going to be looked at differently. So there's the politics of it. So those are the people that are keeping it in the light, the ones that are up there. And oh yeah, Tantra and sexuality, people are becoming more open to it, but people have to understand it and learn it because they can get carried away with it, you know.
So obviously people should come to you for sessions, like, because this is your work, and there's a lot to be gained from having the private training. But if somebody is listening today, what would be like an action step that you could give them, something that they could work on their own to get just a taste of it, to get like some tiny bit more of embodiment, some tiny bit more of mindfulness? Like, what would you recommend?
Well, I would recommend, if it's a couple that wants to practice some stuff, that they would maybe sit on two pillows across from each other and just begin to eye gaze and take a feather. So say the man takes the feather and he feathers her down. He walks all around her body. She can lie down. She can be sitting. And just give her that receiving moment for a good 20 minutes. And then, of course, she reciprocates. And just starting out with that. And then not jumping into sex, but just having some conversation after that or some light fruit, just to see, to bask in the energy of the senses opening, sensory integration. That will be something for a couple. For, say, a man, he can, you know, be nude, looking in the mirror, and start to do some Kegel exercises where his body ping-pongs, like the pelvic moves forward and then back, where he squeezes and then lets go of the, you know, squeezing the pelvic floor muscle, like you're going to pee and then stop. He can do that, but with some breathing. So he would breathe in his nose and let the exhale out the mouth. And to just go back and forth with his body, like this ping pong type of movement, undulation, and just to see where that breath and that movement, how that connects for him alone, being nude in the mirror. And if it's a woman and she's alone, she can self-pleasure herself. She can start to have a mirror there, you know, laying down on the bed and start to honor and look at her yoni with a mirror. And she could play with herself, masturbate. Not necessarily does it have to be with a vibrator, or it could be, but she could start to also do some breathing. And just to kind of, because a lot of women don't really honor this part of their body. Now, there's what we call the yoni showing, where the man could start to honor her yoni, and that would be a whole nother session. But the woman could start to just work on herself and build that relationship and build that sexual relationship and have some, you know, having control of her sexuality, knowing when to give it, when to bring it out, when to bring it in, knowing how she can give and receive when she is in the relationship. They really need to learn themselves first and then come together, because in sexuality, it's best that I have my energy and I know when to give it to you and when to bring it back. It's not control. I don't like to use the word control, but it's having this certain power of understanding my freedom. And see, that's something that you develop, and I have developed that. And it's something that really can never be taken away from you. No matter how hurt you get, no matter how long you're in the relationship, even with your expectations, this can override your expectations in a relationship, because it really comes from your truth, your source, and your lower body. And once you have that, it's your power. It's your friend.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to work with you directly, they want to find out more about the work that you do, where can people go to look up more information?
I have a couple websites, but they can go to tantrawisdom.com. And then also kinepathics.com. That's K-I-N-E, P as in Paul, A-T-H-I-C-S.com. But the Tantra Wisdom should give them some information, and then there's email addresses there as well.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much for demystifying a lot of things that, that people probably have only just a cursory knowledge of, for expanding on stuff related to your professional and personal stuff. It's been very cool because it was a nice mixture of like your expertise and also your experience. So thank you very much for being on the show today. So thank Anita DeFrancesco, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, Tim Marie. It was wonderful meeting you.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thank you everyone for listening. And have a fantastic day.
Hey, you. Do you like patriarchy? Do you like the opposite of patriarchy? Do you ever find yourself patriarchal when you least expect it? Like touching someone's knee without their consent? I know I have. Join me in my audio quest to forge a feminist queer landscape of people in context. Good, bad, collapsing the construction that good and bad exist in opposition. Humble Mumbles. It's a podcast, now available on Bandcamp and iTunes.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.